In 1894, South Australia became the second place in the world to give women the right to vote and stand in Parliament. This feat wasn't achieved overnight, but through years and years of hard work and activism. In this podcast, we'll explore the lives and stories of some of the women who made this possible.
One Dr. Polyglot decides to learn the languages of the poultry yard.
That's the voice of Susan McGarry, the author of Unbridling the Tongues of Women, reciting the hen's language, a poem written by writer, feminist and reformer Catherine Helen Spence in 1886.
He approaches his cocks and hens to encourage conversation, asks them all to say what they would like. The cocks, who are always bold forward birds, respond first, each individually. A handsome yard to me then give, as large as this, or bigger, with 15 handsome hens to live and cut a splendid figure. And the hens strike in, but cocks must fight to keep all right, so do not pen us up in flocks. Why not one hen to 15 cocks?
What's readily apparent from this poem is that Catherine Spence was a woman ahead of her time, not held back by gender stereotypes, status quo, or social ideals. In this episode, we'll take a look at her life and how she helped lay the groundwork for our child protection system today. Born in 1825 in Scotland, Catherine Spence's life can best be summed up as a series of firsts.
She wrote the first novel about Australia, the first novel written by a woman about Australia. That was published in 1854. She wrote for the press. She was the first woman to be appointed to a position with a newspaper, but she was described as a regular outside contributor. That was so that she didn't have to work in the offices where all the men who were journalists worked. And she was known also as a political animal. She ran a campaign for proportional representation as a preferred mode of voting.
Spence is also credited with helping found one of the first foster care programs in Australia. Founded in 1872, this program was known as the Boarding Out Society.
The idea came from Rosamond and Florence Davenport Hill, who were English cousins of Caroline Emily Clark. Their father had been a major influence in what had become called the reformatory movement, which was about setting up separate institutions to put under 14-year-olds into to keep them away from the bad influence. In those days, children who were orphans or delinquents were all being bunged into prisons where they were in company with older prisoners who would teach them wicked ways. Miss Clark and Miss Spence decided that being in institutions was not a good way to bring up children, and so they did their own major campaign to board the children out with families.
The idea of this society was to remove children from institutional living and place them into approved family homes.
To make this work, they had to provide funds to the families to support the children and make sure that the families would send them to school. They established a committee which would get around where these children were placed and make sure they were being looked after.
While the Boarding Out Society had good intentions and was a necessary measure at the time, it has been subject to some criticism since then.
Since those days, we've had the whole stolen children inquiries and the horrors of children being taken from their parents, in particular Aboriginal children. And of course, it still goes on.
Since the 1870s, our child protection system has changed and expanded quite dramatically. Today's services are much more refined and thorough in their investigation, assessment and response. Yet our current child protection system remains addled with problems, including increasing demand and limited resources. The number of children in out-of-home care continues to grow, with 1 in 35 children in Australia receiving child protection services in 2017 and 18. One of the highest represented groups in this system are Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children, who are 8 times more likely than non-Indigenous children to have received child protection services.
At the time of our launch of the 2019 report, for Aboriginal children, there were 20,448 children that never slept at home the night before we released. That's roughly 37.3% of the total out-of-home care population, but we're only 5.5% of the Australian population.
That's Joanne Else from Family Matters.
Family Matters is a national campaign committed to reducing the number of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children represented in our child protection system.
Removal has its own damage. You may know that your mother, you may not have the connection that you would normally or your friends may have with their mother.
According to Joanne, the placement of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander kids in permanent care away from their families can create a strong sense of displacement and can lead to problems further down the track.
We've spoken to elders in remote communities where children have been removed at birth and just dropped back at 18. Those children don't know their languages, they don't know their protocols, they don't know anything, they don't know how to be Aboriginal. And at the same time, the elders don't know what to do either, because all of the milestones and the cultural practices that lead us into being a woman, from being a girl to a woman or a boy to a man, have not been met, which is usually when you start to see the self-medication. So alcohol will become a factor, drugs will become a factor. It's about numbing your pain or, you know, induced disassociation from your pain. Although we measure up what it costs for child protection, we're failing to add the debt that it's creating in social costs. So your health, drug and alcohol problems, unemployment, all of these things.
This overrepresentation of Indigenous children in the child protection system can be traced back to the original policies and decisions that were made on behalf of Indigenous people.
Inside of our families, the effects of the original policies are still present. Obviously, you know, you've got a lack of parenting skills, you've got a lack of financial budgeting skills, you've got a lack of homemaking skills. When you add that to the stolen generations and the psychological distress, in essence, those policies that people refer to as colonisation have a different meaning in health. They're actually a chronic collective trauma. And that chronic collective trauma at this time is still unresolved.
In its latest report, released in October, Family Matters fears that the number of Indigenous children in care will only grow unless major changes are made to the child protection system.
In essence, it could be equivalent to a cultural genocide, because although we're still an Aboriginal people, our understandings and our practices, our languages, are being lost. It's pulling apart the fabric of Aboriginal societies, so that's quite devastating.
So what must be done to curb this growing rate?
We still have non-Aboriginal government officials deciding our policies, our procedures, and our effects. Aboriginal people know what's wrong and know the solution. We're just not empowered to be able to take that solution forward.
To stop this growth, Family Matters believes fundamental changes must be made to our child protection systems and that there must be a shift in power and policy.
Child protection issues down south are not the same as north. They are not the same as Ceduna. They are not the same as the western suburbs. We would like to see Aboriginal families and committees consulted about wraparound servicing. Transport's always been an issue for us for many, many reasons. You know, we live a problem-saturated life. So in order to get across all the indicators and the complexity of the indicators that we have to address, we absolutely need wraparound servicing. But again, we don't look for wraparound servicing that's been designed by somebody who's non-Aboriginal and not living in that area and doesn't understand the local issues. What we look to is having the elders and the leaders or the stronger family members of those regions tell us what they need.
While the intentions of our child protection systems, both past and present, may be well-meaning, the needs of different cultures and communities must be considered to ensure a better life for all kids across Australia.
One of the things that we are really, really advocating for strongly is that we need Aboriginal family-led decision-making around our children so that they're not just taken and dumped into non-Aboriginal families. Let's heal or help to heal families who are vulnerable.
This podcast was proudly brought to you by SACOS, the South Australian Council of Social Service, and made possible with support from the Department of Human Services and Office for Women. A big thank you to Family Matters for making this episode possible.